Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
From high heels, imported expensive cars. Well, again, this is just a facade, as Gordon and you, John, were mentioning during our pre-show conversation. China's economy is a lot about facade. North Korea's economy is much, much more about facade. Of course, it's very interesting to see that Kim Jong-un expressed support for the One China policy while he himself has embedded into the newly revised constitution this two-state policy on the Korean Peninsula. The two Koreas are two distinct, hostile states. What does this mean? It may mean that this is a signal that in case of a conflict over Taiwan, if South Korea gets involved, North Korea may have free rein to create some trouble on the Korean Peninsula.
Gordon, you have a question and comment, please.
Greg, afterwards, what was important was what was not said. And what was not said was that China supports the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. In other words, taking away nukes from Kim Jong-un. If you can comment on that development.
When Xi Jinping visited North Korea 7 years ago, he did mention denuclearization. Not this time. You're absolutely right. What does this mean? It means that China tacitly acknowledges North Korea as a nuclear power state. Why would they do that? First and foremost, because this North Korea, nuclear state North Korea, is a big thorn in the side of the United States, in our side. And that's a good thing for Xi Jinping. It may also be argued that by doing this, Xi Jinping is trying not to push North Korea further into the arms of Vladimir Putin. Quite frankly, I don't think we see a divide between China and Russia at this stage. China has frankly been quite supportive of Russia in its invasion of Ukraine and its aggression against Ukraine. So perhaps there is a little bit less of that, but North Korea presents tremendous strategic value to China. After all, North Korea is China's only former ally. North Korea is a buffer zone between China and the United States and our democratic allies in the region, South Korea and Japan. North Korea is a satellite state and a bargaining chip. Although relations have been on the rocks every now and then, there have been ups and downs. They've gone from the lips and teeth. That's how close they were during the Korean War and immediately after the Korean War, to very tense relations during the Chinese Cultural Revolution, obviously, because Kim Il-sung didn't like it. He wanted his own cult of personality and his own dynastic rule. So although there have been ups and downs, North Korea played mommy against daddy during the Cold War, Russia, the Soviet Union against communist China. Although, again, there have been ups and downs, China's fundamental strategic stance towards North Korea has not changed.
Greg, Kim's going to outlive Xi by decades. Is that significant to Xi when, as he deals with a man who's going to see the future that he cannot?
It is certainly important, and one has to give this to Kim Jong-un compared to his father and grandfather. Kim Jong-un seems to be more strategic. He seems to be more of a strategic thinker. The father and grandfather were very tactical. If one takes a look at what Kim Jong-un is doing on the foreign policy front, getting close to this axis of tyranny, supporting Russia's war of aggression, supporting Iran's aggression against our allies in Israel. Also, on the home front, he's undergoing some very serious restructuring. In particular, he's undergoing a restructuring of the security and intelligence agencies. He has turned the main security agency, about 50,000 agents, the Ministry of State Security, into the so-called, what they call it right now, is the State Intelligence Agency, the SIA.
30 seconds, Greg, 30 seconds.
So basically, they're creating a structure similar to Russia's under the military. They have the RGB, the Reconnaissance General Bureau, which will be moving forward, the North Korean RGB. On the other hand, this state intelligence agency will perform the role of the FSB. He's tightening controls domestically. He understands the importance of intelligence, both domestically and internationally. In his own kind of way, he's got his strategic thinking. He is modernizing, so to say, North Korea's tyrannical regime.
We thank Greg Scarlato, the president and CEO of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor. Thank you, Greg. Perfectly done.
My pleasure as always, gentlemen. Have a blessed day.
A good
By
day
the way, I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning when I do the program with you because I have to go swimming. So at 5 o'clock, I'm in the pool.
Sounds wonderful. Good for you.
Yeah, got to stay at the top of my game.
That's it. Thanks, Greg.
John and Gordon, see you
Thanks.
Soon. Thank you.
All right, Gordon. I think Professor Holmes is with us. There he is. Jim, a very good day to you. I see him, but I don't know that he can hear me.
There we go. I was just saying the ergonomics are a little wonky because we have construction going on behind the house where my office is, so I've set up in the front of the house.
Jim, it's amazing what happens in June. I have guests, one of whom is having trees cut down by the county in front of his home. I have another one who has a construction site right next to his back door. It's June, Jim. This is what happens all across the world.
Hey, you would appreciate this very sad story. Did you hear what happened to Gordon Wood, Professor Wood out of Brown?
No.
In fact, this happened 0.8 miles from here at my Shaw's. He was actually hit in the parking lot and killed by a car. And of course, he was one of the great historians of the American Revolution.
When did that happen?
I think it was the day before yesterday. It came up in class last night.
Wow. Wow.
I never met him. I never got off my rear end and went up and banged on his door. But a great writer, Radicalism of the American Revolution, I think, was his signature work.
In the parking lot, very strange.
Yes, I hiked that parking lot, so that kind of sits a little weird with me. I'm up there most days.
Yeah, I guess you can walk in front of a car backing out. Well, I'll look for details today. It would be reported today.
It was in the Providence Journal, I'm sure.
And this morning, Gordon, we have so many Navy stories. Which way do you want to go this morning? We have that rescue by a robot boat yesterday.
Well, Jim's piece about Chinese aircraft carriers.
Right, awesome. Now you're muted, Gordon.
the robot pickup, though, did you know that they had that? A boat out there to use, Jim. I'm talking about the rescue of the two Army helicopter pilots by what we're told was a drone boat that looks a whole lot like a Chris craft without a driver.
Yeah, it was one of the unmanned service vehicles on the smaller side. But yeah, that's basically. In fact, I actually think that's where some of those things come from. They're just converted. Craft that are outfitted with. You know, navigation and perhaps AI. I don't even know exactly how all that links together. I think that was unprecedented, though. I think this is the first time we've seen that, and I think it's a good sign. I think it's actually a good sign that we're actually maturing. We're maturing all these things that you see even around here in the Narragansett Bay being experimented with.
I agree. We'll go to the aircraft carriers, though. Let me get the recording straightened out. Gordon, I'm just making notes here. This is the making of the John Batchelor Show. but I've got to take notes if I'm going to make it. Okay. We were just in commenting on North Korea, on Kim greeting Xi as if they were equals on the tarmac in Pyongyang.
Yeah, which President Xi did not treat President Trump as an equal on the tarmac when he went to Beijing.
of good note. I think he was met by a third undersecretary or something exotic.
Something like that. To me, it wouldn't be a big deal. But you know how it is in China. They place a great store in such things.
Yeah, I remember the last time they welcomed Obama. Didn't they make him come down the back stairs of Air Force One? Something exotic.
Yeah, I think that's Gordon will probably remember that better. But I believe that is true. And it was a deliberate. That one was a deliberate humiliation. This one was sort of mid-tier humiliation.
All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3. Thanks, Jim. 2. Everything lined up. Looks good. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, and we're going Navy looking. The Navy is the strength of the United States, with two oceans enclosing us like a warm blanket, but the Navy keeps those seas free of threat. And right now, the U.S. Navy is looking at the Pacific again, and the building of a PLA Navy threat that requires a lot of attention. The aircraft carrier building program, as I understand it, in order to field and to put to sea an aircraft carrier, you need three. One at sea, one going through repairs, and one resting or somewhere in between repairs and sea duty again. Therefore, the one or two carriers that China has now suggest there are going to be more in future. We welcome Professor Jim Holmes, first holder of the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the Naval War College. He blogs at the Naval Diplomat, writing most recently of the Chinese aircraft carrier building program. Jim, a very good day to you. Do we know what their ambition is? Once upon a time, I think we had 15 carriers at sea at one time. Are they going to match us? Are they going to exceed us? What is the dream in Beijing? Good day to you, Professor.
Yeah, when I served in the Navy during the Cold War and the few years after that, we did for a time have 15 aircraft carriers. We are now mandated by Congress to keep 11. So that's kind of where we stand right now. And in fact, I think we're about to drop below that because USS Nimitz is about to be decommissioned, and John F. Kennedy, the next one, is not going to be in service for a few more months. But we're sort of at 11. They don't tell us exactly how many of these ships they want. My guess has always been the sort of you mentioned the multiple of three. My guess is that they would like to have six, just so they can have one to do things in the Western Pacific and the China Seas, and then one to do expeditionary things potentially in the Indian Ocean or even points beyond. But again, that's just my guess.
So you think China's aiming at six and no higher?
Yeah, and again, that's just a guess, and just sort of a yardstick to see where they go. They've invested very heavily in surface combatants, including cruiser sized hulls that more or less match up with our cruisers by numbers of missiles and sensors and all that kind of stuff. So. But they certainly place a lot of store in aircraft carriers, not only to manage events around the periphery, but also because at one point, Hu Jintao, whoever was in charge in Beijing at the time, looked around the UN Security Council and noticed that every single permanent five member of the council, plus some other countries, operated aircraft carriers. And I think in part, it's keeping up with the Joneses.
Gordon, you have a question for the professor.
Jim, do we think the Chinese can protect their aircraft carriers?
I don't know that he heard the question, Gordon.
Jim?
No, sure didn't.
Do we think the Chinese can protect their aircraft carriers?
He's not hearing you. I don't know why. You can hear me, Jim?
I hear you just fine.
Gordon, I can hear you. I can't imagine what the difficulty is.
That is very strange. It's usually all the way on or all the way off.
Are you doing anything different, Gordon?
Nope. Huh. You can hear me.
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Interesting.
Jim, go off and come back, and we'll start again.
Okay, I can be right back.
Thank you. I have no idea, Gordon. There's always some new invention that comes in the way.
Do you want me to come back?
Sure. Why not? It doesn't hurt it. This is the making of the John Batchelor Show, run up against an unknown variable in StreamYard and all the other intricate systems between our correspondents and ourselves. Gordon is coming back. Here's Jim back. Let me add to stage. Jim, are you back? Are you back with me?
I can hear you, John.
All right, Jim, are you back with me?
You hear me?
Okay.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, now I hear Gordon fine. I don't know what, but there must have been some sort of hiccup in the system.
Good. Now let me go control my two spaniels who've decided somebody's come to the front door. I'm here by myself.
Oh, except now I can't hear you.
Oh, you cannot hear me?
We're snake bit this morning.
You cannot hear me?
Jim, can you hear John?
Yeah, I don't hear either one of you guys anymore.
He doesn't hear either of us.
Well, I have no alternative, Gordon, but to say we can't continue.
Yeah.
He can't. Jim, are you? Your sound system is on.
All right, try again. I'll be right back.
Yeah. Logic suggests, Gordon, it's somewhere between us and Jim. He'll be back.
He'll be back.
I don't see him yet. All right. We've never run into this one. All right, Jim's back. Add to the stage. Okay, Jim, you're back. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine, Gordon.
And do you hear me?
Yep, you sound good.
Okay.
All right, the third time worked. Now let me control the animals and we'll start. We'll start from the top, Jim.
Yeah, I think we need to.
Are you retiring soon?
No, I'm only 60, so I'm planning on sticking it out for another 5 to 10 years.
Oh, good. Okay,
this is the coolest news in the world. My mom decided to pay off our mortgage, so actually, technically, I could retire next March, but I don't think things are going much better than they were last year around the college, and so we'll see.
What's the problem at the Naval Institute?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you've seen there's been a lot of academic freedom infringements, basically. In fact, it hasn't been painful yet, but they have instituted a pre-publication review. I now have to run everything I write by my boss and by a coordinator here at the college and before it can go to print. Thankfully, they haven't really held me back yet. So I'm cautiously optimistic. But there's always the potential for abuse when you have a system like that. It really shouldn't exist. I don't do anything classified, but there it is. It was a mandate from the Pentagon.
Oh, interesting. Why did they do that?
Well, that's a subject of much debate. I mean, it makes sense if I did classified work, especially, you know, I mean, really, seriously classified work, I wouldn't object to it at all because I might let something out, but I don't know anything to let out. So it seems like you should be able to have a two-tiered system in which people like me don't have to bother just because we can't give anything away.
Is that Hegseth?
Well, it's been brewing for sort of gone into overdrive since last year, but it's been brewing for a long time. Yeah, it's not a new battle.
Interesting. Is there much debate about the building of a new class of battleships?
We're not going to get those things at $17 billion a copy. I mean, that's more than an aircraft carrier, significantly more than an aircraft. We're just not going to get them. the if you look at the imagery, there's a lot of technologies on there that are not proven, like rail guns. We stopped working on rail guns back in 2021. I mean, and so forth. So it's a, I would like to have them in principle, but I don't, I just don't think it's going to happen.
All right, gentlemen, we'll begin again. I've controlled what I can. The workmen are here. That's why they're barking.
Oh, you have it too.
it's June 5. Well, we had our rehearsal and our mysteries for 3 minutes. 5. Thank you, Jim. 5, 4, 3. 2, 1. Nope, not one. So I'm a little rattled, guys. There's several things going on that I can't control. The good thing about working from home is the bad thing about working from home.
I hear you.
Same thing. 5, 4, 3. 2, 1. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang joins me, and we're off to the Navy. The Navy keeps us safe. The Navy's at sea. The Navy has challenges that project into the century. One of them is the People's Republic of China's PLA Navy and the Pacific, and especially the national advantage of having aircraft carriers with their attendant battle groups at sea at all times. Question that Jim Holmes, first holder of the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the Naval War College, reminds me again, and not solved, is how many carriers do you need to keep America safe, Atlantic and Pacific? And how many carriers does China need to threaten that safety of the United States for the balance of this century? Professor, a very good day to you. My understanding is you have one carrier at sea, one carrier going through R&R repairs, and another carrier somewhere in between, coming home and going out again. Three puts one at sea. Right now, I believe the Chinese have two or three something building. What are your expectations of how many they're going to build, knowing that at one time the U.S. fielded 15 battle group supercarriers at sea during the Cold War? Good day to you, Jim.
Oh, thanks, John, and hi, Gordon. Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of guesswork. Obviously, the PLA Navy doesn't tell us what they're going to do. But my guess is always, you mentioned the tactical training cycle, where you have one carrier deployed, one in workups and training and so forth, and the other one in maintenance, repair and overhaul. And that's a thumb rule that is held for our Navy as well. So my guess, and this is just a guess, is they're probably shooting for about 6. And because that would give them a carrier always ready for sea in the Western Pacific if something happens, or in the China Seas if something happens in Taiwan, and also potentially an expeditionary character or a carrier rather that can do things in the Indian Ocean or points beyond. The reason I keep the numbers, or at least my guesswork, a little bit lower is because we have not seen the PLA Navy erect a large network of overseas naval bases, and therefore it looks like they're content staying more or less close to home until they settle things in the Taiwan Strait or the South China Sea or pick your favorite battleground. But again, we will see if my guess holds up.
Gordon, you have a question for the professor.
Jim, do we think the Chinese can defend their carriers?
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to keep in mind that all weapon systems, including ships and missiles and sensors and whatnot, are, they're in a sense they're black boxes in peacetime. You can look at the outside. I can count up ships. We know that they have a lot of ships and are building a lot more. But it's really hard to judge for sure, especially an adversary's combat performance without actually seeing them in combat. I mean, that's a question for the classified realm. They're always watching us. We're always watching them. But we've seen Chinese weapon systems underperform in the Iran conflict. So I think they're probably still behind us technologically, even though they're ahead of us in terms of numbers. So sort of a mixed answer there. But I think they've made great strides ever since vowing to build a great Navy since the mid 1990s. So I would not put it beyond them to actually get there.
My memory is that it's important to ask about air wings and their training cycle and their the depths of the chart of the air wings. Does China have it to keep six carriers? They need a lot of people moving around. Do they have it now, or is it aspirational, those air wings?
Well, you know, strangely, I actually expected to see a lot more trouble out of Chinese naval aviation when they started doing carriers about 15 years ago. They started in the 2011, 2012 time frame. I mean, think about what all the travails our Navy went through trying to figure out how to operate jet aircraft off of carriers back in the 1950s. We lost something like 700 aircraft trying to get this right. They don't seem to have had that sort of difficulty. I know China is very good at managing its narrative and so forth, but I don't think there have been massive losses. I would point out when we go back to the question of numbers that certainly China's early carriers don't carry nearly as large an air wing as our Nimitz class and Ford class carriers, which can carry up to, they usually carry about 70 or 75 planes, and then the Chinese carriers are much smaller. So that would be a sort of a tell in favor of China actually going bigger, just because they would like to upgrade to something more like our ships.
Gordon, you have a question.
So Jim, carriers are offensive platforms. What do you think the Chinese plan to do with them?
I can think of a variety of uses. It appears that they will go nuclear powered at some point. That's a ship that it can take to the sea and provide a presence in places like the South China Sea for a very long period of time. If you look at the first island chain, they worry very, as we all know, they worry about the first island chain being potentially used to pen them in. But if they can break through that and threaten Taiwan from the east, that makes it even harder on Taiwanese defenders than it already is, given all the other strategic rocket forces and all the other things that the Chinese have arrayed against them. But so it certainly gives them persistent mobility in the Western Pacific and the China Seas, the ability to venture out of area and do things in other seas if indeed they get basing rights, like I mentioned.
We use aircraft carriers now and again for diplomatic successes. Is that a likely result of the China carrier building, to call it a neutral site or to call it India as a diplomatic acknowledgement?
It could be. I mean, there's a famous story in the Navy. It's probably apocryphal, but whenever a president sees something bad happening around the world, or something like you said that needs managing diplomatically, or something else, he always asks, "Where are the carriers?" And we've actually seen that play out even under President Trump, but really every president. I think the question with regard to the diplomatic uses of Chinese carriers is, can Beijing and can the Chinese Communist Party actually be diplomatic? They have not really shown the ability to do that recently. There was a time when they tried to do what they called smiling diplomacy or a charm offensive, but as they have become stronger and stronger, they have been more and more intimidating, and that's just not really gonna. I don't think that's gonna fly in India or places like that. They're not gonna put up with that.
Gordon, can Wolf Warrior combine his skill set with a carrier calling on a neutral country?
Oh, I'm sure that they can. And Xi Jinping's primary form of diplomacy is intimidation. And the best thing to intimidate somebody is a carrier.
We have a minute, Gordon, if you have another question.
Jim, you mentioned the poor performance of Chinese weapons. We saw Iran fire China's CM-302s at the Abraham Lincoln in March. What do we know about that? They all missed.
Yeah, I don't think we know a whole lot, except like you said, they missed. I think that suggests that there may be deficiencies in Chinese weaponry, but also we've also seen in the Houthi war in the Red Sea and now in the Iran war that we are able to defend ourselves. We've taken a couple of near misses. Even in the Red Sea, we lost an F-18 over the side of one of our carriers because it had to maneuver so rapidly in order to avoid Houthi fire. But we haven't taken any hits, so that's one of the things that gives me hope that we still have the technological edge as well as the human edge. I mean, as far as tactics, techniques, procedures, all the things that go into making a crew proficient at what we do.
Professor Jim Holmes at the Naval War College, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor. Well, we survived the technology, Jim.
Yeah, that was a good question about Chinese diplomacy. I think it is. We definitely have seen a phase change in Chinese diplomacy. You mentioned the wolf warrior stuff. I call it jackass diplomacy. But
yeah, I don't know what.
But diplomacy has positive connotations.
Yeah, the etiquette of going around insulting your adversaries seems strange, but
it really does. If Xi Jinping and his lieutenants could exercise just a little self restraint, I think they would probably get a lot farther.
I can think of a lot of people who could benefit from self restraint. Thank you, Professor. Very good.
I wonder who.
Thank you, Professor. Good morning.
Thanks, Jim.
I'm here to apologize to Victoria. Victoria, my apology. We've run into technology this morning, and the technology won. So here we are. Good day to you.
Good day to you, John. And I apologize on my part as well. I'm up in Bucks County and have no way to control my Labrador. So she's asleep at the moment, but she may join the shot.
I understand. I've already had a stern talking to my spaniels on this.
If I confine her up here, she'll bark.
Well, they were greeting the morning's workmen, and they regard everybody as not only a potential friend, but also likely to have treats in their truck. So much excitement whenever they show up.
Well, she's tired from her walk, so hopefully she'll behave.
We begin immediately with the concern of Taiwan and AI chips. I heard a story this morning. I was joking with Gordon before we begin. I'll be quick about it. The Economist has a big 13-minute broadcast, their morning robot voice reading the best of The Economist. And this morning they turned their attention to the Chinese economy because of some weak numbers that came in. I believe how much of the debt is taken on by the municipality, some enormous number compared to what we do. And so they said, well, let's sum up what the Chinese economy is. And it came down to this, Victoria, all the learning that goes into The Economist magazine, the Chinese economy is a mess. Are you shocked? Are you shocked? I'm just, what are we,
I guess that's a technical term.
What are we paying these high salaries for? We can do that. I mean, for heaven's sakes, a mess. And there are some details, but the details are laughable compared to the word mess.
Mess.
A mess. All right. So we will begin with Taiwan. Here we go. And we have two segments, Gordon, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, we'll do the first on tech and then the second on. Gordon, this dance of the Kuomintang visiting the United States and now is pending visiting China, is that it?
She's here. Cheng Li Wan is in the United States.
Oh, I know that, but is there a consideration of her visiting China afterwards?
Well, she visited Xi Jinping in April.
Okay, so it's already done. Good. I was reading last night, and I wasn't sure whether that was going to happen again. There's a consideration of her being the presidential candidate, or has that already been determined?
Well, she will be probably in 2028.
Okay. Five. Thank you, Victoria. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm John Batchelor, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome the Vice President of the Heritage Foundation, very carefully helping us understand the threat of the People's Republic of China and the promise of Taiwan, Victoria Coates. Victoria is also a former Deputy National Security Advisor working in the White House to see what Taiwan needs and what it lacks. A very good day to you, Victoria. This time we're not going to talk weapon systems right away. We're going to talk growth. Taiwan happens to be the most important state that I can imagine for the future if you build our future on a vision of what AI can do for mankind. China is the possessor of TSMC, the magical machine assembly of parts called fabs from the builders in Europe, in order to create the highest-end chips that make advance for the high-end companies, Anthropic, OpenAI, all the Gemini, all the rest, the pirate's crew of AI, depend upon Taiwan. Right now, Taiwan depends upon an economy that is growing for its people. However, the question is Taiwan in direct competition with the People's Republic of China, or does it wish Does it intend to make China a customer? Does China intend to be a customer of TSMC? Do we understand that dance? Good day to you, Victoria.
Well, good day to you, John, and good day to you, Gordon. Yes, this is one of the most complicated challenges we face. And in my visits to Taiwan, they refer to themselves as the best possible ally in the worst possible, place. And I think there's some truth to that, that, you know, over the last couple of decades, TSMC and there are other very highly sophisticated manufacturing corporations in Taiwan that have a capability that we just don't have. I mean, yes, we passed the CHIPS Act. We've invested many, many billions of dollars in trying to develop our domestic chips industry. We've invited the Taiwanese companies to come here. That is showing some promise, but not on the scale or the sophistication that it takes place on the island. So we do need those chips. We're desperate for them. And I think we would also like to have some say in how Taiwan deploys them, because we know our partners and allies, in particular in the Middle East, for example, in Europe, also are pretty desperate for those chips and what they represent to their futures. And so I think, you know, we should all be unified in communicating to Taiwan that we understand their importance, we respect their need for defenses, and at the same time, we would be very concerned about their selling the very high-end chips to China. They can sell the lower end ones all day long. China already has that technology. But the very sophisticated ones at Heritage, we really believe that we need some controls on that.
Gordon, you have a question for Victoria.
Victoria, when we look at TSMC, what is the calculus in Washington? Because right now there's a pending $14 billion arms sale to Taiwan that apparently has been put on hold. What are people in Washington thinking about that arms sale and about Taiwan's critical place in the chip making supply chain?
Now that it's an interesting decision that will have to be made. My understanding is that it has not yet been made, and that there are discussions going on about whether this would be seen as so provocative by China that we might provoke China into taking military action against Taiwan. And as we've discussed many times, Gordon, that's the balancing act we face for the next 15 years. Nothing would make me happier than to arm Taiwan to the teeth and declare their independence and, you know, move forward with the Republic of China rather than the People's Republic of China. But at the same time, if we can get through this time, this decade, and not create a conflict in the Taiwan Strait, that's our best outcome. Because as we were discussing earlier, the Chinese economy faces systematic problems. They are facing a demographic disaster that they can't reverse. So in an ideal world, I'd like to manage this diplomatically, keep Taiwan free and safe, and avoid a conflict. Now, that may not be possible, but I think that's what you're seeing President Trump try to do right now.
If I understand correctly, and I welcome your thoughts having visited Taiwan and talked to the Taiwanese representatives about TSMC, TSMC is a brilliant machine. The number of parts, I can't remember, but it's some incredible number of parts that go into it. However, it depends upon the genius of the engineers who take care of it every day and produce. And those engineers are not a big number, and they're in Taiwan. One of the reasons we're going to be slow in matching that when we build similar fabs here in the U.S. is the people. You need people who can train, who can educate, and who can do the job right now. They're in Taiwan. What does Taiwan make of those individuals? Are they state secrets? Are they protected young men and women? I don't know. I've only ever read about them, Victoria.
Well, they should be, is the short answer. And hopefully Taiwan is guarding them like a state secret. And that's also a capability, and this is an interesting aspect to this, that China can't reproduce. They've poured tens of billions of dollars in trying to create a commensurate machine, if you will, to TSMC, and they have failed. And so at least we are close to Taiwan. We are close to TSMC. We have asked them to come, build fabs in the United States, even to send some of these workers. Because when we did the CHIPS Act, we, of course, loaded it up with all sorts of U.S. style, at that point, very DEI-oriented labor rules to get the kind of benefits that the CHIPS Act offered. And amazingly, DEI is not a great way to man your very sophisticated fab for chips. You can't do it that way. You need to go by capability, and that's the only thing that matters. And that's where these Taiwanese kind of super workers, if you will, come into play. So, you know, it may be a situation where we can, you know, offer them very advantageous circumstances to come here and train our people. And maybe that is one path that we can go down. And the other one is to just keep partnering very closely with them and make sure we're the buyer, the first buyer of first resort for any excess chips that they have.
Gordon, you have a question.
Victoria, changing the subject a little bit, Chen Li Wan, who is the head of the opposition Kuomintang KMT, is now in the U.S. She is going to be going through Washington. She's going to be talking to legislators. She's going to be talking to Trump administration officials. What do you think she will hear from the United States?
Well, and I'm sorry to miss her. I'm traveling this week, and so missing a meeting. And because I really think it's a very, very important conversation we have to have with KMT right now, with both parties in Taiwan, that we need them to be unified on issues of their defenses, that this cannot become a domestic political football for them, because the American people are watching this, and they see when the Chinese legislature passes a defense budget that's only 60% of what President Lai requested. And there are all sorts of domestic reasons for this. Oh, they say we're buying a lot of American things. You know, this is good for the United States. But the fact of the matter is that the president requested one number and the opposition-controlled parliament passed a very different number. And that really raises the issue of the United States cannot care more about Taiwan's defenses than Taiwan does. You know, that has to be a priority for the island. So, you know, I don't want to meddle in domestic politics in Taiwan. I have friends that are KMT. You know, it's not my role to demonize them, but it is my role to try to send them this very clear message that if they want the ongoing support of the United States, they have to get onto the same page. And if they want the United States Congress to support the president in potentially not making that arms sale, they should pass that kind of reduced defense budget, because the American people are going to look at that and say, okay, if they don't want to spend their money, why should I spend mine?
We're speaking to Victoria Coates, a vice president of the Heritage Foundation, about Taiwan and the People's Republic of China, especially in terms of producing the highest end quality product there is on the planet right now, which is an NVIDIA chip, moving always forward. And the question is, does China get an aspect of it or does China not? I'm talking about the People's Republic of China. There are other concerns, however, and we're going to turn to the Defense Department making decisions about BYD, about Alibaba, and about Baidu, very commercial, successful enterprises around the world that are also part of the suspect of the People's Republic of China. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, and we're very, very privileged to have the Vice President of the Heritage Foundation, Victoria Coates, a former Deputy National Security Advisor, to comment on the People's Republic of China's aggression and military aggression in all directions, even if it doesn't look like it. BYD and Alibaba and Baidu, three very commercially successful companies for different reasons in China and around the world, have now been added to a list at the Pentagon not to trust because of their connection to the Chinese military. Victoria, I tell a story that reaches back into the 1990s when early days of Huawei, the Huawei executives wanted to buy everything that Ma Bell or its iteration at the time would sell them. And the companies in America were going through a transformation as well from the our youth having a line into your house and cords everywhere to the cell phones we have today. So the decision was made at the top to sell them all the old stuff we don't need anymore. And they did. They sold China everything we didn't need anymore, and China bought it. And then one day, the executive writing this story, visiting China and visiting the early days of Huawei, was introduced to the new head of Huawei coming out from behind a curtain. And as I remember the story, it was a young woman, very attractive, very well-spoken, who was a colonel in state security. Okay, that's the payoff. It was always thus, Victoria. There never was a moment that the Chinese companies haven't been part of state security and part of the military. So I welcome this resolution at the Defense Department. Did it take this long, Victoria, or has it been a hit or miss all these decades since that colonel in the state security walked out from behind the screen?
Now, it's certainly been a winding path, and you know, no coincidence, we marked last week the anniversary of the 1989 crackdown on Tiananmen Square, which, you know, at the time was, you know, quite a horrible thing, and people saw what was going on around the world. But then President Bush was still working on the Cold War. Bear in mind, the Berlin Wall didn't come down till November of 1989. I think he made a very Nixonian calculation that he needed to keep China in his camp and not push back on Tiananmen. In hindsight, it was a huge mistake, because I think that uprising really terrified the CCP, that they could be vulnerable to their own people. And they started this program of weaponizing pretty much everything. And that's when they started with the telecommunications, you know, Huawei, 5G. Now we're looking at 6G, that playbook, you know, of getting all the American technology, putting the American companies out of business, being the only alternative if you're a country that wants to provide these high-speed networks for your people. And then, yes, engaging very, very closely with the People's Liberation Army, incorporating their personnel into your executive suite, on your boards, and then claiming, oh, no, Alibaba, it's just a commercial company. You know, you just buy things from them. They're just like Amazon. Well, no, they're not. They have weaponized them. They've weaponized their products. They're putting surveillance apparatus into everything. And so we just have to recognize them for what they are. And, you know, if the American consumer wishes to purchase these products and support these companies that are so engaged with the PLA, you know, I guess that's their choice. But one of the things I've really argued for, particularly with Amazon, is a very clear marking system on their website. So you can see there should be a country's flag on every page saying American made, German made, Chinese made, whatever it may be. But it's very, very hard to tell where you're purchasing from at this point. So I think we need to make that clear to the American consumer. I think this list is a very, very important step for the Pentagon to not accept the CCP's lies that these things aren't weaponized and to really put them where they belong, which is on our national security list.
Gordon, you have a question for Victoria.
Victoria, you mentioned the COOL list, COOL, country of origin labeling. Senator Rick Scott, Republican from Florida, has been pushing this, but has apparently gotten nowhere in Congress. Do you think that at some point we will have COOL requirements where websites have to list country of origin?
I mean, it is so necessary from my perspective, Gordon. And, you know, it seems such a simple thing. And I do this all the time. I don't want to keep singling out Amazon. You know, they're a great American company. They provide an important service. But I mean, it's everything. You know, you go on a website and you're trying to verify that something is, say, American made. I was doing it the other day with Liberty Bells to give out as gifts for the 250th. I could not get out of a website, was this thing manufactured in China? I don't want to be giving out Chinese, you know, Liberty Bells on our 250th anniversary. And that should be easy. And it's, you know, it's a way for the American people then to vote with their dollars about whether they want to support the CCP or if they want to spend a couple dollars more and support a local business. And I think you would see a real shift in consumer habits here in the United States. People don't necessarily want this stuff. They're suspicious of it. If you know your doorbell, which has a camera in it, is manufactured in China, that should give you some concerns.
In addition, it's poor quality. I mentioned that as a consumer.
Make matters worse.
Right. And then the trick that they play, forgive me, because it was played on me recently, made in Vietnam, owned by China. So You have difficulties even when you get beyond China. I know them by their cardboard, Victoria. China, for some reason, manufactures the worst possible cardboard that I've ever dealt with. So when I get high-end cardboard, I know it's not Chinese, from China.
It's very flimsy, and the Vietnam ploy is really important. They were deploying this during the Biden administration to manufacture solar panels in Vietnam from Chinese components, and then selling them as American or as Vietnamese solar panels into the United States. And one of our companies sued and said this is illegal. They're dumping components. These cheap things that are subsidized are coming into the United States. And then environmental czar John Kerry attacked the American company, saying, you are undermining our climate efforts. We need these cheap solar panels. Don't look behind the curtain. Accept the CCP stuff. It was terrible. So we have to keep an eagle eye on that Vietnam ploy.
I thought I'd heard the last John Kerry story. That's a whopper. Nope.
There's always another one.
That's great. Gordon, you have a question for Victoria.
Well, Victoria, the issue with the Chinese solar panels is that they're made with components that are in turn made with forced labor. And Section 307 of the Trade Act of 1930 prohibits the importation into the U.S. of goods made with such labor. John Kerry doesn't seem to care that much about it.
No, he actually has said, that's not my issue. All I care about is climate. So, you know, to that exact concern, Gordon, that's how, you know, brazen this was during the Biden administration. You think about how dangerous it was. And we can get into on a subsequent show, energy policy, how misguided all of that was. But in terms of our China relationship, what the Biden folk did was prioritize climate over China. I don't think they particularly liked China. I don't think they, you know, had many illusions about China. But if you make climate more important than dealing with the CCP directly, then you have to deal with them on climate because they're the world's largest polluter. And so they kind of created this cleft for themselves. And I think we're still unraveling all the damage that was done. But that's why it's so important what the Pentagon is doing now is not allowing those kind of fictions that China will build up around these companies to remain. And it will be on everything from, you know, green energy projects to retail manufacturing.
Victoria, you remember the blood diamonds and blood cotton. I'm wondering if we could come up with a list of companies that are based in America that guarantee us that none of the products here are from China. Is that something that's imaginable to sign on to that? No China allowed?
Well, I think they're going to see a very interesting divide coming up, and it's probably coming sooner than we realize, where we're going to have two separate AI platforms. My understanding is the only two countries with the economic and technological heft to design, you know, the sort of fundamental architecture for artificial intelligence are China and the United States.
Right.
Those projects are independent, as they should be, and they're ongoing, and they're not going to be able to mix. So, you know, companies and countries that have had sort of tried to have it both ways in the past are going to face a very stark right. choice, and it's not going to be a gradation. It's going to be black and white.
Victoria Coates, Gordon Chang, I'm John Batchelor. Well said, Victoria. Thank you. I sure would like, I almost made a pitch for my favorite new toy, all the Milwaukee tools I can buy, because they're all made in America. And they would benefit if they were allowed to advertise on Amazon as American made. Everybody would.
Absolutely.
Benefit. And I don't know why they don't press Amazon. Their sales will go up.
I agree.
Okay. Thank you, Victoria.
Right.
And
thanks,
thank
gentlemen.
You, and thank you for your dear, darling dog.
Yeah,
she was a good girl.
Very good girl. Thanks. Bye. All right, Gordon, we are exactly at 9 a.m. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
So thank you very much. We got through it all. Dogs, workmen, the vagaries of the Internet, and we got through it. And I'll see you on Monday morning. Have a good weekend. Thank you. And thanks,
you
Lydia.
You too.
Thanks, Lydia. Here come the Roman Orchestra on time.
Thank you. ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.